Service District Board of Directors for Wednesday, May 30th. Will we have a call to order, please?
Director Burnett.
Here.
Director Angelo.
Here.
Director Colwell.
Here.
Vice President Austin.
Here.
President Wing.
Here. Would you please stand for the flag salute?
Attention, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
I still want to say amen after.
We don't need to check on the agenda? I don't see it on the agenda. Okay. Then I would call for public comment for items not on the agenda. And the public comment period provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the board on matters of interest within the jurisdiction of the district that are not listed on the agenda. We ask that you limit your comments to 3 minutes. Seeing nobody.
Madam President, yeah. If I could just quickly take the opportunity to announce that the City of Arroyo Grande last night did approve the memorandum of agreement for the Five Cities Fire Authority that your board approved at your last meeting, and Grover is going to be considering it next week.
Monday night,
yeah.
Thank you. Moving on to special presentations, I'm very pleased to say that the Place Art Gallery is providing us a special presentation today, and I don't know if Darcy or who's in charge.
That's me.
Yeah.
Oscar Pearson,
David Carter.
We have a little bit better idea of what we're hoping to propose. We did a couple drawings to give you an idea of the space with the, that's the old firehouse.
Darcy, you said the old firehouse, so do you have your eyes on the old firehouse?
Of course.
Yes.
Yes. Let's. If somebody would come to the microphone, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Ooh.
So we realize that this is...
You know, real quick, I want to check whether AGP has a good angle on the renderings. You do? Okay.
Yes.
Nice.
And I'd just like to have this as much a conversation so that as much information that seems important to you trades hands here in a short amount of time.
So there are a few things that aren't correct with this, but this was just a quick sketch to give you some idea, because the place that we have across the street is very, it was a very old rundown building, and we're doing the best with that. But because we already have that, we would like to end up with this space being really elegant and more upscale, with a real gallery, white walls, pedestals, an official agenda for the gallery. And we have some of these to hand out. Important thing to do is to get artists here, because the draw to the area is what we're really looking to get out there, and the notion of an international artist residency. I've been in the art game for nearly 30 years, I've seen art communities blossom where there was nothing but, you know, a diamond in the rough, and I think that's what, you know, we have here in Oceano. Anybody have any questions, or do you have the down?
So we had printer trouble, and Oscar is the guy that did these drawings.
He was here. He's been my assistant for the last couple of years.
If I could give you guys one of these, and you could maybe look at it and pass it around. So this is a rendering. Where should I best point this out?
From right back there.
So you can see.
Yeah, they've got cameras for you.
So as it sits, it's basically like that. This is that dirt area behind the building. Here's where the 12-step program meets. And here's the garden area here, where the roll-up door is that I believe the fire trucks used to go out. We would intend to put a coffee shop, and that would be where the gallery space was. And you can see on the drawing bistro tables out front. These spaces are where the storage is right now. Where the fire trucks are parked would be communal studio spaces, so we just basically need to have table space for people to work on. And then the upstairs, I believe it used to be an apartment for the fire department. And it looks like we could split that down the middle and have up to six sleeping rooms, and then a shared space that would have a microwave, refrigerator, and some bathrooms. And this space would be where these six artists would be able to work, and they'd visit for anywhere from a month to a year, depending on what they applied for and, you know, what we had space for.
So go ahead.
So then the AA would stay?
Yes. I mean, that's up to you, but
yeah.
I love that.
Let's explain more about the upstairs. You would have it for people to stay there?
Well, artist residency means that they come here from other countries and they, you know, would stay there. And I've done enough artist residencies to know that, you know, a little private room is all they need.
Yeah.
For me, the minimum is a month because the work that I work with is clay, and it requires you make it, let it dry, and fire it. If someone wants to come that is a drawer, painter, they could stay as little as a week, a couple weeks, but generally a month to a year, with a month to 3 months being about ideal. And so all this is just us giving you ideas, and the bare minimum up front that would need to happen is just to have studio spaces. We're already going to do this across the street, but we're proposing, you know, putting a facelift on that little building and continuing the draw here to Oceano.
So is the idea with the addition of the place that this would be the gallery where, you know, the art is showcased, and you would, at the place that would still be where people would work on there?
We show, Friday nights we will be open art after dark.
And we have a gallery space in there, but it is very, you know, generalized.
It's not a hyper-professional gallery presentation. It's salon style.
There's bicycles hanging from the rafters. I mean, what we propose there is a lot more, is austere the right word?
Well, this is much more the clean,
professional,
box,
what you expect with galleries. And the rotating artists would, you know, as they complete their term here, we would have a show that changed out every month completely. And, you know, just do the whole gallery blitz.
And standard gallery practice.
Art galleries really have a hard time making it in San Luis County. There's not enough, and the rent is so high somewhere like San Luis. That's why Oceano is, sitting here just prime for something like this.
My question involves parking. I see parking lot. Is this our property?
Yes.
Where the pine trees are now?
It's between the pine trees and the sidewalk. That's where he's generally depicted parking.
How would that happen?
Well, that would have to be part of the larger effort associated with, obviously there would have to be, tenant improvements, leasehold improvements. There would be a project associated with converting the old fire station into the studio and establishing parking. I have a number of notes and subtopics that I kind of want to participate, discuss a little bit.
Yeah.
But in terms of, the property conversion from the current use to a different use, and the current use is primarily storage with, some of the area being leased for the 12-step program. But that conversion effort itself would, how would we address that? And that's going to involve the county because it's going to require, land use planning permits. And one of the things we might do is, since the county's budget is coming up, engage with our district supervisor, Supervisor Compton, and see whether or not she might have any community project money that's available to help with this particular effort. Certainly your board has some discretionary funding. We know that with the upcoming costs of next year for Five Cities Fire Authority, we're going to be utilizing reserves. But, that basic issue of how would we convert from current land use, which is primarily storage, and into an alternative land use is really going to be, step number one. What kind of conditions would the county require and, everything else? Certainly, the renderings are a whole lot nicer than the current use. There is... also seems to me to be a better option than somebody who came in 6 months ago and proposed the site be used as a cannabis distribution site. So I'm liking that the improvements in the property that...
And we'll help put out fires, too.
Yeah.
we'll sweep up, whatever you guys need.
Well, I see the parking as as useful for... AA and for, I mean,
really needed there.
Yeah, I made an attempt the other day to get to your location, and there was no way I could stop and park. I went around one way, the other gate wasn't open. I went around the other way, and I just finally gave up and said, I'll be back another day.
Well, it seems like that corner will eventually have a signal.
So the work between the county and Caltrans is to realign the intersections. I haven't heard any signaling efforts yet, but we would definitely want to take into account, the realignment that the county has already designed.
Yeah.
And depending on the future of the gas tax revenues, if voters vote that down in November, then improvements on Highway 1 would be significantly delayed. If the gas tax stays in place, then the county is more optimistic about being able to do the Highway 1 realignments. But in any event, we would want to move forward assuming the realignments are done. And, the opportunity for, sidewalk, coffee shop is great. We've got really good frontage on Highway 1. And a lot of people don't recognize that the district owns all of the property on Highway 1 from the corner of 13th Street up to and including the fire station. We've got a lot of good frontage there. And so how might this proposal be incorporated into the overall property design? So one way of trying to start seeing where can we get money just to evaluate the land use conversion is talking to the supervisor Compton and seeing if we might be able to get a little bit of community project money for next year. You know, generally other agencies who have some money would be looking for a match on that. So your board might have to go into reserves a little bit, but probably not a lot. We recently did the site analysis for the current water yard, and the numbers that we got from the consultant that we're going to be presenting to your board in the next couple weeks is that the conversion on 19th Street is going to be very expensive. And that's partly because the water yard already sticks out into the street and all the county conditions associated with that. And so we're going to have to start addressing on that property we own, which is actually a couple different lots, how might we now consider moving the office yard, the equipment side of it, and where Tony and the guys have their offices and where they're doing work. Are we going to be looking at moving that to our Highway 1 location adjacent to this? And part of the benefits there is that we're not going to have all the site improvement costs that we would be incurring on 19th Street, which are really significant. We'd have to be looking at a strategy where the 19th Street yard is still maintained as a yard. You know, we've got the well and the tanks, but in terms of large supplies, you know, 20-foot lengths of pipe, where we have our soil stored or where we bring, you know, we're still going to have that as a yard. But in terms of the structures and replacing, you know, the dilapidated structures at the yard, we might need to start looking at Highway 1. And then you go, well, that's prime property. And so any design work there would have to take into account then that those buildings might be converted to a different use down the road. But given the dollar amount of estimates at the yard for a full conversion there, I really think we're going to have to start looking at the Highway 1 property. And if we need to do that, you know, addressing the land use conversions for this portion of the property would be timely. So I think it's a matter of, one, re-engaging the consultant, coming up with a cost estimate, you know, for the consultant services to look at the site planning, see if there's some community project money from the county that we might be able to help with that, and then move forward from there. We would also need to address things like the landlord leasing arrangements. Beyond site planning, you know, how would leasehold improvements be covered? My understanding, Darcy, is that you did set up a nonprofit or are in the process of
setting
it up?
We're 4 months out on that.
Okay, so that's going to be way quicker than we're going to move forward on anything, just because we've got a lot of steps that we need to do. So community project funding, can we get some assistance from the county for basic land use conversions? Because we've got curb, gutter, and sidewalk all around the property already, that's done, you know, so that's always a big expenditure. Again, landlord leasing arrangements, leasehold improvements, coordination with a nonprofit. Are there any grant money that we might be able to pursue out there? And then the big thing that I think we need to come back to is what are the community programs? Like, because if we have artists who are traveling and there's a residency program, then what types of instructional programs would be available for the kids in Oceano? So if we can combine this with, you know, both the vision that Darcy has as well as developing some community programs for the kids especially, that would be wonderful because the district, we do have parks and recreation powers. We simply don't have any funding in order to implement any of those programs right now. And potentially through a collaborative program, we'd actually, you know, we'd be able to do something. You know, recreation broadly includes, you know, the creative types of programs that we're talking about here.
Well, and anytime you have artists coming in, I just think of the Edward Weston and Ansel Adams Dune pictures from the 1930s that live on to promote Oceano. And you get artists from outside who come to your area, it does bring a certain level of revenue. You're looking at me. Strangely.
Yeah, no, I'm listening. There's also, I mean, you're going kind of into history a little bit.
Well, I'm just saying
and
that
today there is a large cultural movement, and I'm trying to remember, but down in Santa Barbara, they totally converted like these old dilapidated warehouses into functional use, and there's a term for it now, and I can't.
Well, Detroit, Milwaukee,
yeah.
A couple of the other Rust Belt areas, the cities, there's zones that since the 60s were just bombed out, burned out wrecks. And they figured out that if they could give art galleries, artists, and their studio spaces for cheap or free for a year or two, that the first thing that would happen after these men and women started setting up the creative spaces, somebody opened up a coffee shop, and then somebody opened up a restaurant, and it's that's what's happening in Detroit right now, which is, I'm sure you're all aware, what a bombed out zone of Detroit is. The Prairie was taken back over. There are pockets that started with art studios and have now turned into artist communities. And it's just a decade or two before the artists will no longer be able to afford to live there.
Yeah. Well, fix it up for the other people.
There has always been an art element in Oceana. The New Nights and the Oceana Printing Shop, the Melodrama. It's not that Oceana doesn't have arts and artists, and but this would be a great element.
I think the term came to me, which I think it's called a funk zone.
What?
Yeah.
Funk zone.
What's that?
What'd you say?
Funk. F-U-N-K, yeah, and I'm not sure if that's, but again, it's where in different urban areas where it's kind of gotten run down,
yeah.
You know, artists are coming in, they tend to be like low traffic because the younger generation wants to Uber in and Uber out, the stimulus for Oceano from different areas would be great.
Well, about 15 years ago, they started moving into Skid Row in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And you couldn't have a lower rent district.
Right.
And artists started moving in because they could afford it. And they're risk takers. It's the reason they're artists in the first place.
And we got lots of tourists. That.
Well, an Amtrak stops just up the road. So the artists that visit would love to have a train straight to L.A., straight to San Francisco, straight to Las Vegas.
They could get off at the Grover Beach Station and come straight to Oceano.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's an easy hit.
And then we were talking about possibly either approaching the Melodrama about using their venue for a music venue, you know, once or so a week.
It's been done in the past.
Yeah, that's what I heard. So, you know, you bring music, you start to get the Cal Poly, you know, the college kids, and I think that's where, you know, not long after that, the money wants to see what's going on. And just so I'm clear, I'm not coming to you and saying, gee, I want you guys to fund all this stuff. I'm not asking for any help with this at all. I mean, if there could be help down the line, that would be great. But I'm just saying what I could do with my grassroots people is get that gallery going, get those international artists. Like I say, they're already coming. But as far as we know now, they're just coming to work across the street. But this building is just perfect for this. My wife and I bought a empty warehouse 15 years ago or so. It's on 12th Street in Grover Beach. And we did exactly what we're talking about doing here. And it is a showpiece. I mean, our house is one of the coolest houses anywhere. And it was abandoned. I mean, animals had eaten the bottoms of the doors off and were living in there. Yeah, I'm not kidding. The roof fell in because it rained so much, and then everything inside rotted.
You'll also notice that this isn't a major architectural intervention. This is a fresco paint, some clean lines, a little railing. Well, the sign over Highway 1 is a bit of a stretch, probably. This is cosmetic.
So this is a presentation item, not really open for any board direction at this time. Certainly, you know, Vice President Austin is your assignee to our liaison with District 4, Supervisor Compton, and just on an informal basis, we could start some follow-up discussions there. But My last statement is I just want to make a plug for people to go and visit the place on the corner of 13th and Highway 1 here in Oceano.
Would there be a time that we could all get together? And
the only time we can all, they can all get together is here at formal board meetings.
Oh.
And there are some rules.
No field trips?
No, they can do a field trip, yeah. Yeah, we can, in fact, we could probably walk over there right now, but we can't. If we were properly noticed, would be able to walk over there. But the general rule here with the governing board is that as you're certainly free to dialogue with them as individuals, but what you can't do is dialogue with them as individuals and then tell them what the other board members are talking about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yes, it's part of our state law and our state. Yeah, yeah. Well, they're really important in this situation because if they violate what's called the Brown Act and they take formal actions, then the repercussions are it reverses the actions. So we don't. Yeah. So again, you can talk with them individually. You just can't really share with them what the other board members are talking about because they have to have that discussion here in a public forum.
Well, according to my wife, I am very pushy. But if there's a way that I could get you all to come down there, maybe on the next meeting, next week.
Let's just go individually.
Okay.
If something more concrete develops, then I think a group tour over there. The rule associated with that is that the public it has to be open to the public. Can't have a private tour with the group as a whole because the public has the right to observe any of the conversations that are going on during the field trip. So, just a couple rules.
And
you
another
just have
thing
to make
might be a walkthrough of the firehouse with kind of, addressing what we're looking at, and you might have a better idea of how realistic it would be. I've set up things like this as an artist, not to exaggerate, but 20 times gotten studios up and running like this, so it's not a scary process. I set up my studio when we first moved to this area, everything from construction job sites and dumpsters. I went around and had a working studio, within a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, the nature of this building, inside and out, is that this vision can be attained. It's not a major invasion.
Yeah.
Of the space. It's a perfect shell for it. It needs to be emptied out and spruced up.
Big
lines.
Yeah.
And there you go.
And to address that also, the main storage that you have of records is in two small rooms that could be closed off and not.
Oh, and we are going through and ridding ourselves of all those records.
Okay.
Carrie, you had a comment you wanted to
add? Hadn't the building been retrofitted for earthquake proof recently? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure when that happened, but yeah, you see the steel and the bolts and everything. So that was previously done. And it's really hard to envision a good use for that building other than storage or what's being proposed right now. Yeah. So I will definitely take back any words I previously said about the building just needs to be torn down.
You didn't say that.
I'm taking it back right now, formally. Yeah, take it back.
That modular construction, before you do that, just let us paint it.
Yeah.
and if that doesn't...
We don't tear down.
And looking at the calendar, I think that is 50 years old, and that makes it a historic building for Oceano.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
50 years.
Hey, I'm
historic.
So am I.
Yeah. And just... Maybe levity, but I'd love to see a big Oceano sign across Highway 1.
Well, my proposal was a walking bridge.
Oh, well.
That intersection is so crazy. Because it says Welcome to Oceano on it.
But we were talking about crossing 13th rather than...
Yeah, not Highway 1.
On 13th. Crossing 1 would get other people involved. It would make it much more complicated.
And we could actually... What I want to do is use all the Pismo Pier wood. I thought that would be a really neat... make the construction similar to
yeah
how the pier would be.
You probably are not going to get allowed to, but it would be wonderful.
Yeah, no, I know.
Put it on the side somewhere.
We could just do it and put it on our property on 13th, just a big sign.
Yeah. Anyway.
My wife and her pushy spouse went to the place a week or so ago. I loved it. I was so enthralled. I was back a few days later just to walk around and poke my nose and see what was going on. It sure got me excited.
He was so motivated, he bought a sandblaster.
Well, and you folks, you know, that was a quick visit. You folks stayed almost 2 hours.
I know.
I didn't have the meter running, but I was really, really pleased.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Just as it is right now, there's a tremendous amount to drink. Yeah, it's art, design, antiques, architecture.
And for the kids, they have a pond with turtles.
Oh, yeah. And the big goldfish.
Yeah.
We got one of those. My friend bought one of the lighthouses the other day.
Oh.
She's very happy, yeah.
Wonderful.
And then I got for my niece one of the moss ball succulents.
Oh, uh-huh.
For her birthday, and she sent me a picture of it today.
Well, y'all better keep coming back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No,
we'll try.
Well, with all these feel-good discussions, I'm kind of bummed to remind your board we do need to start talking about budgets.
Yes, sir. I was just thinking at the clock.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thanks again for your time.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For the back and forth.
Yeah.
Makes it a lot easier.
Thank you for caring about Oceana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew that was.
And now we have to move on to business items. Review and approval of cash disbursements.
Madam President.
We'll wait a couple more minutes.
And you might want to, even though there's no formal action on that, ask to see if there's any public comment on the presentation.
Yeah, I would be happy to ask if there's any public comment on the presentation.
I was wondering if since we've been to the economic opportunity zone, we haven't looked at what that is, I guess, yet.
Would you, could
that factors in? And also, I didn't know
Bonnie, if you
please come forward and identify yourself.
Benita Ernst, Oceano. I just didn't know if being declared an economic opportunity zone would factor into this, if we're helping get any money or not. I don't know enough about that. And also, I guess there's also possibly some promotional money from CBID, so they've gone, but they might recognize that. So those two things. Sounds great. Can't wait.
Thank you.
And CBID being the County Business Improvement District?
Anything else? Let's move on to review and approval of cash disbursements.
Any changes, Gary?
What? Any questions?
Nope.
Any comments?
Public comment?
Calling for public comment. Anybody want to come forward for public comment? Seeing nobody come forward, I'd entertain a motion.
I move we approve the cash disbursements as submitted.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0.
Madam President, with our two attendees in the public today, I would tend to believe that they are here definitely wanting to participate in 6C, which is the letter that I've drafted to state parks on the EIR. If they're also wanting to sit in and listen to the budget discussion, that's great. But if the primary focus is on 6C, we might consider doing 6C first.
We'd be happy to. What's your pleasure?
Okay.
Oh.
I'm here for the letter.
Okay, well then, we'll call for a public comment in a minute on it. You're there now. Speak up.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say it was a really nice surprise to see this in my mail this morning. I want to voice my support for everyone and hope everyone will support this letter to the state parks regarding the PWP. I think it is really well written. It covers a lot of bases. The PWP could have a huge impact on the quality of life of Oceano, and it could have a huge economic impact. So it could have a negative impact, or it could have a positive impact. And I think to express that you want a voice in that is not a bad thing. And I think to get it in before the 5th would be great, and thanks for your cooperation.
Thank you.
A little bit for the board background, we did have the public comment from a previous meeting asked to look at this. And often, I advise your board to not get into public comments on things that you don't have direct jurisdiction over. This one, when I looked at it more closely and then I talked with President White, certainly there is some overlap. In the notice of preparation from State Parks itself, they are specifically asking for other agencies to comment with regard to our services. And so our services include, or the community is potentially impacted, and we've had these discussions before, about garbage that is generated on the dunes, and then people come through and we have it generally under control, but there is an impact there, so that could be addressed. Also, septic waste that is generated on the dunes. We know that since I've been involved in the district, there have been occasions when we've heard of people opening up the septics as they're driving down the street. And we had one in particular where County Public Works asked us to respond, even though they have the street's responsibility. Those discharges are not part of our wastewater system, so they're not covered by our SSOs, the sewer system overflows. They're not covered by our sewer system management plan because they aren't generated. But it is an impact on the community. So the third component that I identified is the recreational component, that the district has recreational jurisdiction. We have no program because of no funding, and whether or not part of State Parks could help in some collaborative efforts within the community. Hard to imagine what those might be. And the other two, with regard to solid waste and recycling and septic waste, are really, generally under control, but there are impacts, and so they should be evaluating those in the environmental impact report. But the big item, which is what are the economic impacts going to be on the community, whether positive or negative, on various things that are being addressed. Often, technically, economic impacts are not a required component of an environmental impact report. And I have a very general understanding that in some situations they can be brought into an environmental impact report, but generally if they're addressed in an EIR, it's at the discretion of the lead agency. So we're basically asking State Parks to use, the better part of judgment to include economic analysis. Last week I attended a meeting with county planning and an individual who is from Arroyo Grande who asked me to attend in order to, talk about this a little bit more with the county, because some of the direct impacts of changes at State Parks are really going to be under the county's jurisdiction, especially with respect to the streets and traffic circulation, Pier 1, and how those might change. I got to say that the individual, Megan Martin, who is a county planner, was extremely good to talk with about the variety of things that are going on. And the chord that was kind of struck is that, well, on the one hand, we want to ask State Parks to make sure to include certain, topics within the EIR. We also recognize that if they're going to do an economic analysis, the depth that they might be willing to agree to do economic analysis may be limited. My general understanding is that there have been numbers produced about the overall benefit of the Oceano Dunes to the local economy, and they may take what's called a macroscopic, a very broad brush approach if they decide to do anything. And my advice to your board as time goes by, because it's beyond, the specific scope of this letter, but relates to this letter, is then how might the county do parallel efforts on community planning for Oceano concurrent with State Parks' development of an EIR? And where Megan Martin was really, really good to talk with last week is she identified that county planning basically has a tier three prioritization of projects, where the third tier is basically things that have been identified as being good and what they want to pursue, but are put on the back burner without funding. Tier two are discretionary projects that are funded by the Board of Supervisors that are deemed to be important discretionary projects, and it all depends on the resources that are available, with Tier 1 being mandates, you know, regulatory mandates from the state, which they have to comply with. I also asked her what her perception was in terms of the overall workload of county planning and the ability to take a Tier 2 project and move it forward. And her general response was that she felt like the department and the county did a good job of realistically identifying two-tier projects that could move forward. So under this concept that as state parks moves forward, we would love the county, through their land use planning functions and community development, to concurrently also address issues with Oceano and how economics might change. Another chord that we struck was that the county is doing so right now with Avila. So in Avila, they're developing a community plan, and what they're doing, like Oceano, Avila had a number of different planning documents that guided land use development. In Oceano, we have the revitalization plan. We've got a specific plan. And off the top of my head, I'm not going to be able to list off the other, you know, five or six. All of those planning documents are included in the revitalization plan as, you know, references. So anybody who wants to understand the various documents the county has produced for Oceano can just go to the revitalization plan and find the list. But in Avila, what they did is they took those different land use efforts and they've combined them into this consolidated community plan. That's one potential approach that we could encourage the county to go down, especially because of existing efforts. So the county is currently designing the realignment of streets on Highway 1, which is called the Revitalization Project, although it's really a road improvement project. But they've also designed and gone out to bid on the drainage project. They are about to do the improvements for Air Park Drive Bridge. There's a number of different, we're doing the low impact design, low impact development plan through the grants in our water resource reliability program. So there's a number of different efforts that are going on right now for Oceano. And it would be great if the county would really help in developing, you know, a bigger community plan and set some vision. And if that would be concurrent with state parks or efforts, that would be ideal. And so I mentioned to Megan that we'll continue to work with her. I'm going to meet with her again and others, community members, in the near future on how would we scope a community plan for Oceano maybe. The Oceano Advisory Council is going to be really has to be central and integral to that, because that's the advisory council directly for the Board of Supervisors on land use planning. But if the timing is right in the future, the request from your board is certainly appropriate. And so I mentioned to Megan that I'd be glad to, you know, continue to meet with her to scope how something might be approached. And then separately also mentioned to her that, well, we might be talking to some of the supervisors too, because if it was good enough for District 3 and good enough for Avila, then, you know, certainly Oceano deserves its fair shake too. So that's a concurrent work effort. In terms of the letter to state parks, it clearly defines, you know, shows things that are under our jurisdiction. And I think it's good if your board was inclined to, want to work with language and everything. I think general discussion right now, in order to see if there's any edits that are desired. If we get too much into an editing process, then I would encourage your board to, you know, authorize the President White to take the feedback, create the final letter, maybe work with one other board member to create the final letter. And we do have an early June, I can't remember if it's June 5th or June 9th, deadline. But the ninth, but that's easily met. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Jim?
Oh, I'm sorry. One of the things that I clearly state here is this issue of our involvement in the discussions is really about the state's parks EIR and what might result. That I continue to encourage your board to sort of stay away from the debate, which is really a state parks APCD debate, air pollution control district debate, on what's the appropriate future of state parks, because there's a lot that weigh in. That issue is really state parks in APCD jurisdiction, but the relationship to Oceano and the community are what we want to focus on.
It seems to me the economics, well, it sort of begins with the figure that I've heard before is like 2.2 million visitors to state parks, including the dunes, per year. That is a huge number.
Yes.
And I think it would be helpful if we had some kind of a breakdown. I don't know if it should be done economics in terms of dollars and cents, the contribution to Oceano, Grover, AG, Pismo. I would like to see some breakdown of that. And perhaps that could be included in if they do the economics along with the rest of the EIR.
You wanted to add that in here that you'd like to see a breakdown of each.
We may want to include it in our letter, although it may be strained in this letter to state parks, but hopefully they do include a macro economic approach in this EIR. And I would like to see it include this breakdown among the various communities, which really draws in the county.
And along that line, I think that, I agree with the comment that in a letter like this, it can get challenging if we get into too many details.
Right.
But on that last bullet point, which says evaluation of the economic impacts of the Public Works Plan, I think it'd be easy to add something like including community-specific impacts.
There you go.
Something simple like that would be terrific,
yeah.
I think, in this letter.
Yeah.
It might be hard. Ideally, in the world of computers today, you'd be able to go off of information that each of the businesses generates and know the zip code of the individual who's swiping their credit card, right? That information's not always available. We know that it is on some types of sales. For example, if you're buying an automobile, they track where the purchaser is from. But beyond that particular product, I'm not sure how much. So we can just say, we can put it in the request, what kind of data is available to state parks, how well they can do that. We'll see.
Questions. I'm happy that we're approaching it this way, like you said, really outlining with our district, what our powers are, but also specifically just the economic portion of it. It's just so critical. Hopefully they can put it. I know, like you said, it's not something that's always in an EIR, but it would be nice if they could spend a little extra time on that.
Well, I think we put disadvantaged community in there a whole bunch, so hopefully that will help.
One thing, and I don't know whether it belongs here at all, but and when I say the word traffic, everybody, but we do have a fire impact. We are responsible for fire. And this has been one of the issues down there.
Yeah. We can rest assured that the traffic circulation will be addressed.
Okay, so we don't need to worry about that.
No, we don't.
Linking it to one of our responsibilities.
Yeah. So, and I think that it may be that the county does not provide any comments on the notice of preparation for this EIR, simply because their primary services, they already know they're going to be addressed.
Yeah.
Traffic circulation. Yeah. There's no way that EIR could be certified without having traffic circulation address.
Oh, so, yeah, I know. That's one of the primary things.
With regard to traffic, it's interesting. On busy weekends like this last weekend, the vehicles with all of the campers and trailers and everything else are two lanes from the entrance to the beach virtually all the way down to Highway 1. And for those of us who live in that area, we've got to go on pier to get home. And what I've done is I've gone into the opposing lane.
No.
To to get home, and a discussion with the local gendarme says, that's ticketable, and I will do it.
But I got attacked by a
rat. You did?
One car. I was just, I was late getting back to work.
But my point here is not illegal activity. My point is, state parks could really modernize their reserve system so those lines could move quickly. They're all through a reserve online reserve program. It should move so quickly rather than people walking around the vehicles, handwriting down license plates.
Right.
And I apologize for my dismay that you violated traffic laws, but I did used to be the director of transportation for the county, so that was just a reaction from the old days, that's
yeah.
all.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to get in trouble in all of it unnecessarily, but I've got to go down here to get home.
Yep.
You turn on Lakeside, and then you go up to Juanita.
Yeah, which is fine if the traffic's not all the way back to Highway 1.
Well, and, on the serious, to reiterate the serious side of your comments, when I come in on weekends that are busy weekends, like I came in a couple times over the weekend, I remind myself that I don't drive through Pismo and Oceano.
Yeah, exactly.
I go up to 4th Street and Grover, and then I head over and I get to 13th Street, because I forgot that on Saturday morning. And yeah, it added like 20 minutes to get into the office because of the congestion that we see on the big weekends. And it's not, just on Pier Avenue. It's throughout the entire, Pismo, Grover, and Oceano area.
So. It is.
Pismo has no parking.
Yeah, they're
terrible over there. I don't go there for any reason anymore.
I only drive through there.
I don't even do that.
My destination is Oceano.
I believe we need some action on this.
I do have one change, which at the end of the last bullet would be comma, including community-specific impacts.
Yeah.
We need a motion with that change.
Yeah, I think that a motion to, approve the letter and authorize President White to sign as amended would work well.
So I'll make the motion that we approve the letter as amended, authorize President White to sign and send to the California Department of Parks and Recreation.
I'd second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Carries 5-0. Thank you. Thank you. Well, I believe we're back to 6B, budget.
Do you want to take maybe a 2-minute break as we load up the PowerPoint?
Yes, let's take about a 5-minute break. Budget for 2018-19 and 2019-2020.
That was a tongue pull.
Yeah.
Tongue twister. Madam President, members of the board, our district does 2 1-year budgets, and so the current fiscal year 2017-18 is the second year of the 2-year budget that was approved in 2016. In this is a worksheet, so it's not a proposed budget. The preliminary budget will come to you at your June 27th meeting, and it will include, you know, whatever you like or dislike about topics that are included in these documents, these worksheets. So I want to cover a couple of different points in general, and then start delving into some of the details. In general, we have some structural changes in the budget, and those were based on prior discussions with your board. The two that are jump out real quickly is the changes that are proposed associated with the allocation of our administrative and indirect costs for the district. Some of those changes have been talked in general over the last year plus, and some of them have been discussed specifically at each of the quarterly budget reviews that your board has had. In general, the overall administrative cost allocation formula, which currently today has the two largest, is 45% of our administrative costs are charged to water, and 40% of the administrative costs are sewer, with the other 15% being spread between fire, lighting, garbage, and facilities. But it's been discussed on several occasions that this relationship of water to sewer of 45% and 40%, which is almost splitting our administrative costs between water and sewer, really is not a great reflection of the level of effort that we do in the administrative efforts regarding water and sewer. It's clear that our functions as a water district take up far more of our time than our functions of operating a wastewater collection system. And part of that is simply because on the wastewater collection side, we don't do the treatment and disposal of wastewater. That is the responsibility of the South County Sanitation District. We do have some important responsibilities like the sewer system management plan and dealing with sewer system overflows. Of course, every new development then comes through and we give will serve letters to, we have to address both water and sewer connections. So we do you know, plenty of work associated with both the water and sewer side. We have in here the proposal that that relationship of 45 and 40% moves to 60% and 30%, with then fire, lighting, garbage, and facilities combined dropping from 15% down to 10%. And what that proposed allocation is simply the idea that we roughly spend about twice as much time focusing on water than we do on wastewater. Some of that is, you know, Celia's work with our utility billing. Even though we bill sewer on our bills, every meter read is all about water. So have we done like a detailed time study associated with all of our administrative efforts? And the answer is no. But why is it that we have you know, relatively good confidence in these numbers, is that when we turn and we look at the time charged by the field crews, the three-year analysis indicates that our field crews spent about 65% of their time on water and about 25% of their time on the sewer system. And for administrative side to work on a 60-30 relationship closely resembles that, and we think that that's pretty fair. Now, as we look at the budget numbers and we recognize that this reallocation of administrative overhead costs to the water fund, it has some significant impacts on the water fund's budget. One of the, you know, movement from the current formula to a future formula, one of the things that we could consider is phasing that in over a couple of years in order to mitigate the immediate impact on the water fund. I don't necessarily recommend that, but as we're looking at the fund-by-fund impacts and what next year's budgets are, that's certainly one of the issues in, you know, within your board's discretion. Moving, though, to the one cost allocation formula to the next cost allocation formula really will be a better representation of allocation of overhead costs. But there's a second component, and often when we're talking about overhead, having one formula will often fall short. And so the second formula is the indirect costs associated with the field crews themselves. And that's what Carrie has mentioned at every quarterly budget update, that we've been incurring some of the costs associated with the field crews in our administrative fund, And meanwhile, we've been having budget savings in water and sewer. And so those costs, if I'm going to cite them really quickly, relate to things like their leave time, vacation, sick leave. They do have a little bit, the field crews do charge a little bit of their salaries to the administrative budget when they're in for the weekly meetings primarily, or when Tony's attending your board meetings. And this is in the details, but I'm just going to run through them verbally. CalPERS, medical, payroll taxes, state unemployment insurance, employee insurances, boot allowances, clothing, and standby. Those are all indirect costs associated with the field crews. And what we've done here is we've moved all those costs into the administrative budget, consistent with our quarterly report presentations. But rather than allocating them based on a general admin cost allocation, we're proposing to allocate them based in proportion to direct labor hours. And that's kind of important because a few of them historically had, like standby, had only been charged to the water fund. And yet, you know, the standby time that we pay to the operators, basically it's 24/7, right? They shift their duties, but someone's always available to respond. And whether it's a water system response or it's a sewer system overflow, there has to be cost sharing between the two funds. And so the proposal is to take those indirect costs associated with the field crews, specifically identify them, and then to allocate them to water and sewer and garbage in proportion to direct labor hours. The three-year analysis indicates that the direct labor hours or direct labor costs between the various enterprise funds roll pretty consistent. On any given year, they might jump up or down a little bit, but they're relatively consistent, and we think that those direct labor cost allocations, which are shown on page 7 of 48, are a good reflection of what the history is of how much time the field crews spend on the different enterprise functions. Garbage is shown as 10%, and that's higher than historical, but that's because the new position that's been approved from garbage is factored in also. So those were some significant changes associated with the administrative and overhead cost allocations. On inflationary impacts, we put the note in there that I would need to clarify this, that we speak to the fact that we have just initiated negotiations with our employee union, SEIU, and that we don't have any estimates associated with those costs that are incorporated into the budget. And that's simply because that's a confidential negotiation that we conduct with your board and with representatives of the union. And it's at the conclusion of that, then we'll be addressing in the public setting about what those impacts are. But what we do have in here is salary adjustments that are based on the existing union contract, where the existing union contract provides for annual salary adjustments based on the consumer price index. So we've folded those in there as just a way of generally representing that we know we're going to have some sort of cost increase. We don't know what it's going to be until the union negotiations are completed, but we threw in the factor that's associated with the current MOU. And that way, when we're doing our separate confidential discussions, we have sort of a basis on which to evaluate the negotiations. That was a little bit of a clarification because when I read back through the report, some might have interpreted that we have nothing considered in these numbers for possible wage increases. The operator and training that your board previously approved, where half the time is going to be allocated to garbage, and then the other half of the time is going to be shared, depending on the duties that Tony directs, are in these numbers and continue to be valid based on our prior estimates. But one of the more, so the two significant changes are, one is the changes associated with admin cost allocations, and then the second one is, what are you going to do with me? Because what we've incorporated into the budget is the idea of starting the succession planning. And this is going to be one of our important topics. My original contract was set to expire in July. Last fall, your board extended it for 2 years. But a lot of the reason behind the extension of 2 years is to make sure that we have the time for good transition management from me to whoever is going to replace me. That in this four-year period, I think that our general belief is we've done collectively a good job with your board, with legal counsel, myself, and all of the staff really have done a good job of, you know, putting the district in a good direction. I reflect a little bit back on Matt Guerrero's comments when I first got hired, and Matt would comment that he felt like Oceano was on this slow descent and that the plane was going to crash sooner or later. And in financial lingo, we'd say that's heading for bankruptcy. And the fact is that we've, you know, the plane is back in the air and it's traveling along pretty well. And so the succession management is going to be really important in order to maintain continuity and to be able to move forward with the efforts that the district needs to be moving forward with. And so what we've incorporated for workshop evaluations is what would be the cost of hiring a full-time district engineer slash assistant manager in year number one, which then I would still be on board and using year number one as the transition year, with the second year being I'm no longer the general manager. We do have some money in the second year's budget for me to continue to work part-time, sort of a post-retirement part-time, which would be obviously completely discretionary to your board, but also subject to some of the new pension reform rules that exist in the state of California. My ability to retire and come back and work for the district on a part-time basis is required under pension reform to get CalPERS prior approval. And so it's discretionary, and it's subject to approval of CalPERS. It's discretionary year board subject to the approval of CalPERS. And in discussing this particular topic, why am I putting it on the table right now? Well, you know, again, when we talk about Matt Guerrero's slow descent of a plane, the Oceano Board of the Directors, I believe at the time, hired me because I sort of had the unique set of skills in dealing with bankruptcies with other community services districts, with dealing with program and project management and some of my prior employment to really address the critical needs that existed at the district 4 years ago. And some of the work that I've originally been slated to work on, I haven't completed, and likewise, other work that we didn't envision me working on, I have worked on. But still, it's important for the district to recognize that what I brought to the district 4 years ago isn't necessarily the same set of talents that we need to start focusing in and moving forward. Yeah, there's stuff that I can, you know, continue to help the district with. But this goes along this, there's a theory in economics that's called decreasing marginal utility. And it comes by a couple of different names. But the idea is that when you have any sort of resource, a human resource or whatever, that's somewhat unique, as time goes by, the benefit that that unique resource provides you starts to go down because things have been tackled, jobs have been, you know, done. And so the idea of paying me my salary just to continue then is arguably not the best use of Oceano's resources. And so then why am I looking at, you know, recommending a district engineer as an assistant city general manager? Is that under the successor management, where is our district's focus got to be in the upcoming future? And it's all about deferred infrastructure. We know that separately, we're going to be working on the Five Cities Fire Authority issues, and we've got some work in the short term. And that also lends itself into this workshop recommendations, is that we know we have a lot of work to do on fire emergency services over the next year. The whole plan underneath the MOU that your board previously adopted, MOA, and the city of Arroyo Grande adopted last night, Carrie and I had a meeting with the fire chief and the consultant that your board awarded authorized the purchase order on that last meeting. So we're moving forward on that. That's going to take a huge amount of my time. And my biggest concern is that as I'm focusing there, and as our consultants are working on our water resource reliability program, which is identification of all of our water resource infrastructure, that if we don't have the resource to pick up that ball and move it forward, I'm really concerned that that work effort could languish. And with the grant opportunities out there right now, we don't want that work effort to languish. And the other side there is that who's best to really help push the deferred infrastructure program through? And my position is it's somebody who, they don't necessarily need to be an engineer, but has to be a detail-oriented project manager. And that typically is an engineer. And those individuals are the ones who, you know, engineers love to get into the details, the nitty-gritty of everything. So I think we've done collectively a really good job over the last 4 years of setting the district up for moving forward in the future. And I want to be involved with the district, you know, for a very long term in the future. But this workshop, and when we look at the water budget and the deficit that we're potentially looking at next year, from a policy perspective, I think your board really needs to look at that from the idea is that that's your initial big investment in dealing with the deferred infrastructure program. So we have two different changes that are going on, and they most notably affect the water fund. There's benefits to the sewer fund, but in terms of the challenging impacts, it's the modification of our indirect cost allocations. And that is something that I think is really important, because sewer today is just paying more, too much. And we've been focusing on water. We can't forget about the sewer collection system. And those percentage allocations to the sewer is just too much. We need to make that change. If the idea is we want to mitigate the immediate impact of those administrative allocations, you know, we could phase in some of that over a couple year period. But the second component of it is the cost associated with the district engineer and start working on this succession management, and to have the resources really available to be able to focus in on our deferred infrastructure program. So with those comments, before I get into some of the detailed worksheets, I want to see if there's any board questions at sort of this juncture.
Did I hear you right that you thought that there were significant grant opportunities at this juncture?
Yes, and there's another grant measure that's on the ballot in June. So the $400,000 that we've already had awarded to us, which is essentially paying for the consultants to address our water system deferred infrastructure. We've also gotten some money for disadvantaged communities to begin some of the design work once the capital improvement program is evaluated. And there's going to be some money also available automatically for us to begin construction activities. Now, those next two phases that are subsequent are relatively smaller, but there's going to be more grant applications out there. And the fact is, there's some money out there that we might be missing on today because we're not shovel ready to go through, move forward with some projects. But yes, the part of it's the result of the drought. There's no doubt that statewide voters' approval on different, funding propositions has been significantly influenced because of the statewide drought and everything. And again, there's another measure on the ballot. I think it's in the June. In fact, I know it is. I just read through my voter pamphlet to seek to, again, to get some statewide voter approval. So as a disadvantaged community, we definitely always qualify for some of the loan grant programs through the State Water Board and through the United States Department of Agriculture, USDA, because we have a population of less than 10,000. Those programs have existed for a long time. There's other grant opportunities right now. But the bottom line is we've got some deferred infrastructure. You know, we've got galvanized, 2-inch galvanized pipes that are serving, blocks in Oceano that were installed in 1950. And I've been asking Tony to bring in a cross section, because on a galvanized pipe, they rust from the inside. And so if it was originally a 2-inch pipe, you always wonder if you can stick your pinky in it today. And those things crumble every time they have to go fix a leak. The problem about cutting those pipes is as soon as you cut them, they just start breaking. And, you know, the crews have got to try to, you know, keep cutting until they stop breaking. So we've got some, you know, pretty bad infrastructure that's in the ground. The 1980 water line that was under Oceano Lagoon that was, you know, we just replaced with a very successful emergency project. 1980 construction, you would not expect to fail so soon. But that's because it was difficult construction, and, you know, my non-engineering evaluation tells us that that was just a tough one for them to build in 1980. And whether it was earth movement within the lagoon or whether a tree was growing and wrapped itself around that pipe and moved or something, you know, hard to say how it broke. But that was more unique, the aged nature of our system. Is definitely a big problem. The other reason why, going into the weeds or the details a little bit here, when we saw the recent contractor bids on both Oceano Drainage Project, which the county ended up not pursuing because the bids were too high, the numbers that we saw on Air Park Drive and then resulted in my recommendations and your board decision to self-perform that particular contract, I really think that having like a district engineer assistant general manager coming in to work on when are we going to do more in self-performance and what other opportunities do we have under the public contracts code. In the recent years, the public contracts code has loosened up on some of the design build alternatives, and do we want to work that in? But if we take standard approaches to going out for, you know, design, then bid, then build, we're going to be more subject to getting bids in that are high. And so being able to work with either establishing contractor lists, which are allowable under the public contracts code, where we go out and we do outreach and we ask specific contractors to get onto our contractors list and develop those kind of relationships, that's an additional work effort that could be very well important, because when currently our avenue is to go out on the electronic bidder boards, and then it's a matter of who wants to respond to the bids. And on our Airport Drive project, there was only one response. So the effort of trying to work with contractors and make sure to really get competitive bids requires, you know, getting them to have confidence in us as a client. And so having the resources available to do that kind of outreach is important as well.
What percentage of the system is this 2-inch galvanized installed in 1950?
Well,
I mean, is it a small percentage or is it large?
It's anything over 0% is too high.
Too much, yeah.
Yes. I'm not sure what the actual percentage is. We, you know, that's part of what Canon is evaluating right now, and we'll come back. When I think about 2-inch or undersized 4-inch lines or some of the other, I mean, it's a real mixture of different facilities that we have in Oceano. It's definitely got some significance to it. Now, there's some parts of the system that are in really good shape. After the San Simeon earthquake, in the damages, especially in the beach area, the repairs and the FEMA funding for the repairs really helped to upgrade a number of the water lines in the areas that are subject to a liquefaction. So there has been some good work done since 2000, I guess. But the challenge is it wasn't really funded by the district, right? It was really funded by FEMA. And so, the work effort ahead on the district is going to be getting to those details and then figuring out how we're going to fund them. So having a district engineer assistant manager who is working as, you know, the idea is whoever is hired would be the target to then get promoted into the general manager position, work the transition, obviously, ultimately, subject to your board's final decision that the person has, you know, got to work well with the district, the staff, your board, get their job done. There's a carrot there then for that person to, you know, move into the general manager position. So we would want to be targeting the initial step as somebody who can address infrastructure.
So is it plausible to have an engineer or a quasi-engineer step in knowing that we would want him to be groomed to become general manager when we get rid of the existing general manager?
Oh, I knew I was going to regret my scoffing at your traffic violation.
It took me a while.
Yes. Here's the challenge is that a lot of the CSDs really have to target engineers to be their general manager. Heritage Ranch, for example, just hired a new general manager, and he was an engineer who came out of the county. I know that the Sand District has got a slate of candidates that include an engineer. What I've previously discussed is that it's the other qualifications, right? So on a small district like this, for many of our positions, people have to wear multiple hats. And that includes Celia and Carrie. Carrie works on budgets, and she's got human resource responsibilities. Celia does our utility billing, is going to be helping with the special tax calculations for the fire department. And so with the small CSD, you know, the two kind of different hats that I wore is one is I'm a CPA by trade, but I have also a lot of project management and water district experience. And so, you know, I kind of came in with multiple hats. And so to find a general district engineer, an engineer who also has the traits to do good management has got to be the focus. Those tend to be project managers or program managers, engineers who know enough about engineering that they can get into the details what they want, but they're really managing, you know, projects or managing programs. And those are the types of engineers who then are more suited for taking on general management roles as well. So we do need to be very focused in on the recruitment and looking for the traits that best meet Oceano. That's also why I think that, you know, we don't want to be in a rush. We, you know, placement. Hiring our business and accounting manager took us better part of 6 months to find the right person. So when we look at these budget numbers, we assumed that assistant general manager, district engineer, would be employed on July 1st. That's not going to happen. So automatically, these numbers would produce budget savings. There's also some details in the water budget, for example, that include contract engineering. Well, we're not going to be as, we won't have to do contract engineering as much, but I wouldn't want to delete that item because the individual who might be employed is going to have to turn around to consultants and get some support on some stuff. For example, what the field crews have come with is a request to clarify the rights of way and the easements that the district has. So there's areas in and around behind the airport, between the airport, the lagoon, and railroad that has a lot of sensitive habitat, and we have manholes down there, and we have easements down there. But what are we going to do about accessing our facilities when we have, you know, riparian habitat right there? And exactly where are our easements, and what are our rights? So we have a number of different areas in the community where, in working with Tony, we've identified the need to address what our property rights are. So in having a district engineer sink his or her teeth into those particular issues, they might turn around and say, well, I need to get a title report on this, or I need to get a surveyor to come out there and show me where our boundaries are. So that contract engineering line item that we've had in the budget forever would hopefully be used less for engineering then and more for the other professional support that our staff would need in order to address the issues like easements and rights of way. Shall I proceed?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. So, what?
Timeout.
Okay.
be a 30-second timeout.
Director Caldwell needs to get some coffee.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm already doing it to them, huh? I'm only not even halfway through the budget presentation, and I'm... Well, we could talk about something, and then he doesn't remember. We can say, don't you remember?
Yes, we can proceed, I think.
Okay, so what's not included in this budget right now, or in this workshop numbers, and it's the equipment requests. And so what we've done over the last several years is we've when we developed the final budget, which is in August time period. Let me back up. So this is a workshop today. The preliminary budget, which has to be adopted by June 3rd, is really the revenue and expenditure plan for next year, sources and uses. When we adopt, or when your board considers adoption of the final budget in August, that's really about closing out the current fiscal year, figuring out where we stand, you know, in the current fiscal year, what kind of budget savings we had. And the final budget is all about the balance sheet. So the preliminary budget is about revenues and expenditures. The final budget is about reserves. What did we have savings? How do those go back into the savings account? And what do we do about reserves? And what we've traditionally done, or at least over the last few years, is that's the time when we would look at our budget savings and say, do we want to dedicate some of that money to equipment? Certainly Tony and the guys have identified some equipment requests that they have. One they've discussed with you already regarding when talking about self-performance on Airpark Drive and the desire to have a new utility truck. So those particular equipment requests would really come when we're approaching the final budget in August and after we know how this year ended. So that's not included in this number. And then the other one that I'm really not speaking to very much, even though these numbers are there, is the impacts from the Five Cities Fire Authority. We don't see the need right now, though, to make any advance prepayment of the loan from the water fund to the governmental fund. That in February, we had done our final reconciliation of reserves. That Caliber had finished up the audits after all the sheriff's building evaluation and all the interfund loan evaluations, that the auditors finished up and blessed that audit. And then in February, we came back and said, okay, what does that mean in terms of our budgetary reserves? And in general, the note was we were better off than the prior conservative estimates. And so we do have sufficient general fund reserves in order to fund the deficit for Five Cities Fire next year. Those numbers are slightly less than we had previously presented to your board because property tax revenues are looking a little bit better. Again, I think your board has discussed the fire authority and its budget on numerous occasions, and so I'm not really focusing on that in today's workshop because it's, again, been subject of several prior meetings. So at this point in time, I want to turn to page 10 of 48 and start running through some of the budget summaries. And what I intend now is to run through some of the numbers that reiterate the general discussion that we just have. And those are really going to be a few of the worksheets. We also have included all the details on a fund-by-fund basis. But I'm going to leave that to the board if you want to ask any questions in those details. I wasn't going to run through those specifically. But on page 10 of 48, what that illustrates is what the revenue and expenditure plan is in bottom line basis for our three governmental funds, the non-enterprise fund. So it's the general fund, the equipment fund, and the facilities fund. And again, it's the general fund and really the fire and emergency services that are driving the 2018-19 deficit of $58,635. We had originally estimated that at around $75,000, but again, property taxes are up a little bit, and then we trimmed the lighting budget a little bit. The ability to trim the lighting budget a little bit is we just simply look back at prior years. The replacement of the light bulbs from, you know, the older bulbs to the more efficient energy bulbs is providing us power savings, and we think that we still have more than enough contingencies in that budget for the lighting. So it's a combination of a little bit more property tax revenues and trimming the lighting budget a little bit that brought the fire fund deficit from in prior estimates of around $75,000 to now about $58,000. In the second year, in 2019, we show a budget deficit of $134,000. When that's simply using the strategic plan numbers again from Five Cities Fire Authority, but the MOA is only committing us to 18-19. And in 19-20, the second year, I don't really see us incurring that kind of a deficit, because one of two things is going to happen. Either we're going to have a parcel tax and it's going to get approved and the funding deficit issue is going to go away, or it doesn't get approved and the provision of fire services is going to change. And certainly if we are able to negotiate a revised JPA with Grover and Eric Grande, that would be great news. But if we don't have the ability to do that, then we're just simply not going to be incurring those greater costs in the second year, because they're going to have to, even if we're getting Five Cities Fire Services in the second year, which is the way the MOA states that at a minimum we're going to get the first 6 months, right? That the earliest it would terminate is December 31st, 2019. But if we're not in there for the long haul, then we know that these numbers are going to be brought down, because the need for Five Cities Fire to continue to hire in their transition of reserves to fire to permanent, you know, that plan is going to have to be modified. So the second year, again, we based it based on strategic planning numbers from Five Cities Fire Authority, but that will have to be really reevaluated after, you know, this time next year. With respect to the equipment fund and the facilities fund, those are both naturally designed as break-even budgets. The equipment fund is the same numbers as the current year. Under the facilities fund, where we collect about $190,000 in revenues and we spend about $190,000, some of that money is getting transferred over to the general fund, again, to help with fire as the third component, and Carrie might have that number.
Yeah, $21,000 for both years, yeah. A little over. It's highlighted in yellow on both funds.
Yeah, so that's... So those are our governmental funds, and to me, on those three funds, there's no new news, and it's, you know, standard business. The next sheet, page 11 of 48, is where we then look to the enterprise funds. And both the sewer fund and the garbage fund, the numbers are good. You know, estimated revenues are going to exceed estimated expenditures. The sewer fund includes, you know, the part of their revenue sources are repayment from the general fund for the development of the sheriff's building. Those revenues are going to last through about 2022. So while we're showing budget surpluses right now, we know that there's a portion of the revenues that the sewer fund will no longer be receiving around 2022. And we do have deferred infrastructure associated with the sewer system, and those will need to be addressed between now and 2022. But during the course of this two-year budget, we're still looking good for the sewer fund. It's the water fund that we're looking at, you know, some deficits. And so what we've provided that Carrie and I worked on is this impact analysis. How is it that we went from the current year's budget to looking at the numbers in the proposed 18-19 budget? And so on the water fund itself, we can see that a projected deficit of $185,000 just changes in the overhead allocations themselves are about $187,000. And that's a component that exists. The other components, again, this district engineer assistance general manager would have an estimated cost impact if employed for the full year, and we know that that won't happen, but if employed for the full year, would be about $112,000. and we're projecting state water savings about of $132,000. So when we went, it's really then state water that is helping mitigate some of the cost increases. So we've been conservatively budgeting state water, and that was based on the data that we knew 2 years ago and 3 years ago. We have a lot more confidence in our projections now. There was just a lot of stuff going on in state water several years ago. The district is buying temporary water, increasing the costs. Probably not necessary, but that was part of the baseline when the rate increased. So this takes state water charges down to about $925,000 a year, and carrying the current year's estimate is about
871. So that's compared to the 1 million that was budgeted this current year.
Yeah, so we budgeted $1 million for state water this year. Costs are coming in around 875. Those savings are really what's paying for the emergency water line project that we just had to do. And thankfully, we had those savings. But more realistic estimates on state water are included here. And then the cost impacts are both changes in overhead, and the second factor is the district engineer assistant manager. The $18,261 at the very bottom says other changes in revenues and expenditures, and that's a whole bunch of line items added up together within the details of the budget. So, you know, again, the idea that what are we talking about in this workshop is both are subject to your board's discretion. And we feel good in, you know, ratcheting down the state water costs. The changes in overhead allocations could be phased in over multiple years. The district engineer assistant GM position, I'm putting it on the table because I think it's really about starting to make that initial investment in our deferred capital projects. $200,000 is not it's not insignificant by any means, but we've also got grant revenues in excess of $400,000, and it's when we look at it from the perspective of we're getting all this grant money, the district needs to make an investment as well in order to make sure that we're really well poised to move into the future. And with the work associated with the fire department, I just, you know, I can't make the promise I can do both. It's going to be a lot of work out there, and I still have other cleanup work I have to do, like on rules and regulations and personnel policies and stuff. So and then on the sewer fund, we see how the changes are decreasing some of those costs. So that's water, sewer, and garbage. I don't know if there's any board questions on those. The final sheet that I wanted to cover is the next one, page 12 of 48. And what that does is that it gets into a little bit more of the details of what we were just recently talking about. So on this, these changes in the administrative budget, where the administrative budget would go up 35%, well, 27.7% of that relates to the changes in the direct labor allocations. Our basic inflationary adjustment increases in the administrative budget are about 3.5%, and those are going to track pretty darn closely to the payroll estimates. And then we've broken out annual impact items versus one-time impact items. Those almost sound the same, but the annual is the impact items that we would expect to put into structure. We're going to see that every single year. So the $29,000 item that we have listed here, again, discretionary to your board, I guess my pitch will be, in the grand scheme of things, this is a relatively smaller item. And that is that currently we have a temporary part-time person who's helping with administrative assistance. They're doing primarily records management work right now. And this would be basically the proposal to change that into a permanent part-time position. Still part-time, working at about 24 hours a week. And, you know, whether we work that this year because of projected budget savings. But that's the idea that we, you know, we're certainly finding it extremely beneficial to have that part-time individual staff. And whether it's the same individual, we know that the person who's working right now has bigger plans in the future, you know, doing paralegal programs and whatnot. So it's really not about the individual, but it's about the resource. And so that covers approximately $25,000 in wages, plus about $4,000 under state law, part-time employees, we have to provide sick leave, and that's about the only benefit that's incorporated there. Under one-time costs in the administrative budget, we have election costs next year. So those are every other year. Every two-year cycle is going to see the first year where we have to pay the county clerk some, you know, costs for conducting our election, but it doesn't show up in the second year. Moving to the water fund, the more detailed reconciliation again, in moving to the inflationary increases, even though labor is factored in at 3.5%, it's only 0.5% of the water fund budget, and that's because we have so much non-labor in that budget, you know, all state water payments and Lopez payments. So even when labor does change, it tends to be a relatively smaller percentage of the total budget. Again, we see admin allocations and direct labor allocations there. But on the one-time items, the one-time items, the new employment wages and the new employment benefits relate to the district engineer assistant general manager. You know, we actually have the state water costs there as a decrease in one-time impacts, but that's going to be ongoing, so maybe that should have been under annual. But up in annual then, new employment wages and benefits and regular wages step CPI. So part of that is the rate increases, and part of that is the new OIT, the operator in training to help work on. Half their time is going to be on garbage, and the other half the time is going to be on water and sewer. So that's essentially that's part-time assistance to the field crews on water and sewer, and there's a little bit of analogy there to seeking part-time assistance on the administrative side.
So that would be a new hire along with Casey and Jason?
And Tony, yes. And that was one that was previously approved by your board. The job description has been approved, and anytime we have a new job description, we have to meet and confer with the unions. We just haven't done the recruitment yet. And part of my delay in the recruitment was, you know, the old excuse of other priorities sometimes. But also in the back of my mind, I really wanted to gain comfort with the funding that was available. And so I'm still comfortable with that. So half-time would be dedicated to garbage and the community programs for cleanup. So Habitat Humanity just did recently a community survey. And it'll come forward to your board in the near future. But one of the big results from that community survey was to clean up and fix up Oceano. So the movement that, you know, the policies your board has approved and the approval of this position are certainly consistent with what the community has identified as a need through the Habitat for Humanity survey. And we have the garbage franchise revenues to pay for it. So. Again, in understanding that we're going to see budgetary changes, I really wanted to see the numbers come through so that the confidence level was strong. But it has been previously approved. And then in these details, we show Lopez is going up a little bit. And the other item is we are, in the details, we have an increase for our NCMA costs of about $20,000. And that's because we know that the evolving nature of the groundwater litigation means that we're going to have additional focus on that, and not just next year, but in the coming years. And we'll continue to manage that as well as possible. That's also a separate item on closed session today, so we'll get into some of those detailed discussions. But in any case, we know that we're going to have some increased costs associated with groundwater management and the litigation, so we've incorporated additional money into the budget there as well.
So we
Pardon me?
We will have two new employees coming in this next budget.
Yes, and...
Sometime.
A potential conversion of the part-time to a temporary part-time to a permanent part-time. But the focus here is that that increase is really then associated with, it's not associated with administration of the district, it's associated with the services that we provide and the need to focus in on our capital improvement program to use the existing work that we've been doing and to really make sure that we don't lose momentum on it.
Yeah.
There should be the question out there that says, okay, if I have a 2-year contract, what's the risk? You hire somebody new, and then I say, well, I'm not giving up. So, what I am open to, though, is that if the budget gets approved as, relatively consistent with this workshop, then at the point in time that we go to your board with a job description and actually initiate a recruitment effort for this new position, then at that point in time we would address my contract. Because I think what's fair there is that in order for me to be flexible, we figure out something that this person is on, let's say, through the end of the fiscal year. Well, on July 1 of 2019, I still have a year under my contract. And there's severance provisions in there if your board were to say, okay, Pablo, we like this new person a lot more than we like you, and so time for you to go. And so then I could sit back and I said, well, okay, fine, then pay me my severance, right? Well, that would be like lacking integrity and ethics and everything else like that. So I would envision that if this is supported, ultimately next month in the adoption of the preliminary budget, when we work through the job specs and stuff, we would address my contract as well. And the basic idea is just eliminating on July 1st of 2019 the severance provision. And just at that point in time, I would be at will for, like a 2-week notice from your board or something like that. My intent, pardon me?
Not 24 hours.
Yeah, well, my intent would be to work through this transition period and then retire on a date that's agreeable, with the board. And then if the CalPERS authorization comes through, then it's really then that would be a subsequent decision of the board at that time as to whether they would want me to do any part-time work. In terms of wages on part-time work, it wouldn't be any different than, what you're paying me now. In fact, we don't have to pay Social Security as an employee. On a part-time basis, I'd be paying my Social Security. You guys would pay a little bit of Social Security too, but there would be no longer any pension. There would no longer be any, vacation benefits. State law would still require sick leave benefits, but we would address those details, again. But the idea is this is a transition plan. We had previously talked in fall that the extension of my contract was in part because we really wanted to make sure to have an orderly transition and to incorporate those, that policy approach in the budgeting is what we've laid out for workshop discussions.
I would think we would be past the fire. We'd be on to water engineering, but my assumption would be that water litigation would still be over our heads.
Water litigation, the groundwater issues are going to be on the district's table, yes.
So,
and they might get more complicated because, we're in an adjudicated basin, and yet the state also has the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that are going on in the state of California with water, and there's no escaping it.
What I was saying is that when you get ready to retire, there is still a job that you are probably the most skilled representative of Oceano on. You still have all that knowledge. So, I'm just looking at you were talking about a half-time position. I'm just saying one of the reasons we would still need you, even if you got everything else taken care of.
Well, I appreciate that. It is one of the areas that, I've developed a professional... I always hesitate to use the word expertise because CPAs always say we're not experts at anything. It's just part of the code of the unwritten code of ethics of CPAs is that, you know, we just crunch numbers. Well, you know, sometimes crunching molecules is not that much different than water molecules isn't that much different than crunching numbers. So it's been an interesting, you know, couple decades of working in water resources and those kind of issues.
Yeah, well, that was just thinking off the top of my head.
Well, and, you know, to go to the Pension Reform Act, it's really getting CalPERS approval on part-time work in a post-retirement effort requires some addressing unique needs of the district that cannot be fulfilled by the regular staff. I'm sure there's a lot more detail to it, and you know, legal counsel and I are going to have to address it. But the basic two rules is that an individual can come back and work part-time in a position that's being advertised. So let's say any CSD has a vacancy in their general manager position and they're advertising for the recruitment of a new general manager, I'd be eligible to go in and be an interim general manager for those CSDs. The other area, which is a lot more gray, is duties that are unique and are not otherwise filled by district staff, permanent district staff. And that's a really important provision because in doing that type of work, you really have to submit a proposal to CalPERS and say, this is what our intent is, and give CalPERS 3 to 4 months to respond. And it's absolutely, like, they've already been going after a number of people in the state for non-compliance with the rules, including some within San Luis Obispo County. So it's really not something that we want to mess with, partly because pension reform has been big, you know, on the public's mind. A lot of people, in looking at increasing costs of pensions that we still have, are asking about pension reform, and a lot of people don't recognize that pension reform already happened, or at least a component of it. Maybe there's going to be more pension reform, but we're not yet seeing the benefits of the pension reform that did happen because the number of employees that have been hired in under the new rules, you know, it's still going to take many years for that pension benefit to come to fruition. So any which way you look at it, it's the, you know, taxpayers, not just in California, but throughout the country, are very much concerned about pension rules, and we don't want to deviate from anything that's part of pension reform.
Thank you.
On the sewer fund, again, kind of talked about those numbers really quickly. Similar situations, the one that I want to, the very bottom, again, we're still on page 12 of 48, right column, we show savings associated with, you know, that's mislabeled. It says transfer of the fire fund from the sewer fund. That is because we've had $50,000 in the budget every year to address the lateral program, and we simply haven't had the ability to do so. I would be looking then for the new employee, the district engineer, to be able to also move forward with some of the details associated with the lateral program. So rather than budgeting that for consultant efforts, we've taken that out and would have that as an assumed duty for the new district engineer / assistant general manager. So that's sewer fund real quick, but that's it in a nutshell. We also have lots of detail worksheets in case anybody studied them and wanted to discuss them. But be glad to, you know, answer questions or dialogue further.
I think we're dazzled.
I have a few questions.
Well, go okay. On, Andrew.
So on page 10, the facilities fund, the 191,040, should that be in red?
No.
Okay, because I was looking at that going, okay.
What was that?
On page 10, the facilities fund, under 2019-2020, the 191,040 being in red.
Yeah.
I was just double checking that.
Yeah, we were mostly using red to indicate a deficit. That's right. Just expenditure, so yeah, that should be black.
That should be black.
Yeah.
question on page 11 when you were breaking out the district engineer assistant GM. So roughly the $148,000 salary, is that, have we done like a survey on other districts or local communities?
So what the salary component of that is about $135,000. Yeah, and then there's, you know, there's some benefits that have to go in there, and then some of the costs would be distributed to garbage and some of the other funds. I just did the detail reconciliation, or Carrie and I just did the detail on water and sewer because those are the more significant funds. With regard to the $135,000 as a sort of a placeholder in the budget, we would have to come back and actually recommend a specific salary schedule. You know, in general, what we're seeing right now to be able to really recruit a good general manager is we're probably looking at about $150,000 a year. And so I was kind of backing into 135 as being, you know, the lesser number, where then if they do well and then they get promoted into the general manager spot, then they'd bump from about 135 to about 150. So that's roughly a little bit more than a 10% increase to move up in the position. It's, that's the general judgment that I was using in coming up with $135,000.
Okay, makes sense. And then regarding the continuance of the part-time position and turning it into a permanent part-time, that original effort was regarding document management. Is
yes.
that still the continued focus going forward, or would it transition to something else?
Well, we still are working on document management. I've taken a little bit of liberties to use a broad definition of document management. So, yeah. So what we've done also in the county had a panel of experts talk about groundwater management. And it was about a 2.5-hour panel discussion. We downloaded the audio, and our temporary staff right now is putting a PowerPoint to it. And the reason why we wanted to do that, especially because we've got a lot of, you know, more water and groundwater efforts moving forward, is that after I listened to the audio, I thought it was a really good coverage of groundwater topics, both relating to adjudications as well as the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. But it's really hard just to listen to an audio and keep focused. And so I wanted to make sure to get a PowerPoint presentation put together. It's probably 85-90% done. A little bit more work to be done on it. We'll send it to the county for their review and see if they have any input, and then get it on the website and distribute it to the other agencies. So it is document management in a sort of way, but the added value really is the idea that it directly relates to, you know, the body of knowledge that is important in talking about water resource and groundwater issues. And then, of course, our temporary staff is currently going through the paralegal program at Allen Hancock. So to take this topic and to translate it into a, you know, a PowerPoint presentation, since groundwater has so many different legal aspects to it, is, you know, is good for us. It's good for a regional, you know, educational tool. And it was good for the employee in terms of what they're doing and working through the paralegal program. In terms of moving forward in the future, it certainly seems like there are many different things that are coming at us. One example is keeping up with some of our own enforcement issues. And so, you know, we have a number of violations of our ordinances that are out there. In fact, there was another one this weekend where somebody was doing what appears to have been some grading that maybe they shouldn't have been doing, broke through a 6-inch water line. Tony had to respond, get Crandall Construction out there. So we're going to have to be working on that one too. It's not that the permanent part-time person would be doing that particular work, because a full-time staff member is going to do that. But the ability then, when that full-time staff member gets distracted on these, you know, enforcement issues, then to get the support on the other duties, whether it's accounts payable or what, from the permanent part-time is really where we see helpful. So what are we not getting to on the administrative side? There are a number of different things. And when the more unique the duty comes, the more I'm going to want to assign it to a permanent staff and then have the part-time staff cover some of the regular duties. So.
And the only other thing I had was in regards to the water fund going into next year, the year after, and looking at as far as even coming kind of deficit with looking at all the changes and the allocations going back to that with regarding administrative costs, I'm happy to renew that. We've kind of talked about before getting everything lined up really well within the district, and a lot of the things that we've been working on come to the board over the past year. This, I think, is another one of those. Have we looked at, though, how this could end up changing regarding water rates, pre-drought to post-drought?
So there's two answers there. One is the water rates that were adopted in 2015, and they have, as you mentioned, both the drought water rates and the post-drought water rates. And could these changes affect that water rate structure? Then the second component is we've long understood that we're going to have to look at what is the rate increase necessary to deal with our deferred infrastructure. And on that second component, you know, the idea is we look at our costs, how much can we get grant revenue for, what's going to be the net cost, you know, the community, and there will be some sort of a cost to the community. So because this is basically the first initial investment by the district, and it's, you know, out of district money for deferred infrastructure, how much of these costs will then be incorporated into the rates necessary for the deferred infrastructure program versus how much of it might result in a modification to the 2015 rate increase? So both of those are going to be have to be looked at. When we established the 2015 rate increase and had public comment on it, you know, the idea is we don't think we need to touch that. It's going to be about separately addressing deferred infrastructure and what's going to be necessary to fund deferred infrastructure. And I think that there's still validity to that. My only concern right now is as we've been monitoring this post-drought situation, we're not seeing consumption coming back up a lot. We are seeing it edge up a little bit, but we need to continue to watch that. And if the idea comes by, comes that at the end of the three-year period for transitioning from the drought rates to the post-drought rates and consumption doesn't come up and we're going to be facing revenue shortfalls on the operations and maintenance side, then we might have to reevaluate that 2015 rate increase as well. So the basic goal still remains the same, is that, you know, deferred infrastructure and those kind of costs are going to be addressed separately through you know, a separate type of rate analysis, and then we're still going to have to monitor the 2015. It may also be beneficial to, you know, modify the 2015 approach. We have four tiers in the rate structure, and of course, right when we were in the middle of, you know, your board's consideration of that, the San Juan Capistrano case came through and said tiers are bad. And what I'm noticing in the water, because San Juan Capistrano lost a significant lawsuit on their tiered rate structure. Now, they had pretty egregious tiered structure, which ours are not like that. But I am seeing more of the water districts going to a simple one-tier or two-tier and not four tiers. And so, you know, reevaluating how those changes are affecting water districts overall would also be part of looking at the 2015 rates. But when we think about it from a bottom-line dollar standpoint, it's more about the rates associated with deferred infrastructure and less about the 2015 rate structure.
True. Yeah, and I guess that's where I was saying that it could get – so, you know, back in the fall and the spring, you know, we're looking at the different – you know, as far as looking at the consumption, trying to track that, what the transition would be to the pre-drought, I guess, rates. And then with the change in admin allocation, that the consumption would have to still be more the focus rather than the actual end of dollar figure, because now that we changed the administrative costs,
well,
sure, the budget could end up going more red, but you know what I mean? But regarding that's not necessarily indicative of consumption in the pre-drought rates.
Right. Yeah. And So when we see the changes in the overhead allocations, what we're also seeing is a significant decrease in the operating fund from State Water.
Yes.
Right. So those two, they're not exactly, you know, offsetting. But when we match up the savings in State Water to the changes in overhead allocations, and the difference is $50,000, and we've got a $2.2 million water fund budget, those two items are kind of offsetting each other pretty closely, and that means that we're still relatively well on track with our hopes and expectations out of the 2015 rate increase. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Public comment.
Okay, the new operator in training, was that, we were talking about another person for helping with the garbage, with the cleanup?
Yeah, and so I can't remember, in the current fiscal year, remember it was about this time last year, your board adopted the policies for the garbage fund, garbage services. And I can't remember when the board approved the operator in training.
September.
In September. And so this then incorporates that which was previously approved, and the goals, the individual spent half their time focusing on garbage, and then the other half the time supporting the crews on water and wastewater.
And we have never advertised for that job.
That's correct, we have not yet.
Do we have job specs?
Yes, we have job specs.
Is that a college level or high school level? Or
a lot of the job specs, especially for operators, do not require college.
They have skill level.
Yeah, and it's an operator in training, so the pre-qualifications really aren't going to be significant. You know, it's the opening of the door for somebody.
Got all their answers, Andrew? Okay.
So that was just a presentation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so under the recommendations, we do have the one recommendation to set June 27, 2018 as the date of the public hearing for your board to consider adoption of the 2018 and 2019 preliminary two-year budget.
Entertain a motion?
I'll make a motion that we set June 27, 2018 as the date of a public hearing for our board to consider adoption of the 2018-2019 and 2019-2020 preliminary two-year budget.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. Move on to closed session.
President White, is there any public comment on closed session?
Is there any public comment on closed session?
Seeing none, pursuant to Government Code 54956.9A, there will be a conference with legal counsel regarding the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District versus the City of Santa Maria et al. Item number two is pursuant to Government Code 54957.6, conference with labor negotiators. The agency designated representative is the general manager. The employee organization is the Service Employees International Union 620 and unrepresented management positions.
Do we need our staff here? Do we need a PG? APG, you would be free to go.